Fevzy, we've got some calls for you already. People getting in touch. How are you when it comes to vacuumers?
Shall we find out?
This is from Ian. He says, I've got an... Oh, actually, it wasn't a vacuum cleaner. My mistake. It's an oven, but it's a Hoover oven.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
The heating element has gone. Can it be replaced, or does Ian need a whole new oven?
Right. So you have to go to an authorised repairer for that. So you start with Hoover. You can look up their website. Either get them to quote for the work if they will quote for it, or look up authorised repairers. It depends on how old the oven is. They can be cost-effective heater elements in ovens, actually, but it really just depends on you know, part availability and the design of the unit. You know, one of the things when we talk about repairability of items is not just to do with the availability of parts, but it's also how was the device designed. For example, do you need to dismantle the whole machine to get to that element? Is the element combined with other things that you would have to replace at the same time? So there's those sorts of questions. But I guess what we don't know is how old the oven is as well. Mm. I mean, if the oven is, you know, pushing 8 or 10 years, it may be something to think about replacing it as well, because safety standards on ovens improve over time as well. So that's something worth bearing in mind. But I think the key is authorised repairer or Hoover themselves and get a quote. It's up to you whether you think that's a cost-effective repair or not. They may even just say that the parts are not available anymore.
Well, there's that as well, yeah.
Yeah, so you have to look at all those things. But that would be my advice. But don't go for... an unauthorised repairer, because with an oven, you know, you've got the potential for disaster if it's badly repaired. So you have to have a professional repair on it.
Mm. And in the meantime, soup for dinner. Mark has got in touch to say, can you let me know whether the new Echo Studio is worth getting? I've got it on pre-order to arrive on Thursday. It's costing just under £200, but I'm not sure whether it's worth the money. That's Mark in Hastings.
Right, so... The Echo Studio is one of the new devices from Amazon. They're basically putting it inside absolutely everything. To be honest, I haven't tried it yet, so I don't know.
What does it do? It's like an Alexa thingy.
Yeah, essentially. But what I would say is, I'm quite a fan of all the Amazon Echo stuff. I've not found one that has been... poor value for money. I mean, this particular thing is a high fidelity speaker, so it gives you much better sound and sort of 3D audio and all that sort of thing. I guess what I would say about it is, it's kind of designed to sort of compete with Bose type units, and it looks very sleek and all the rest of it. But it's a single unit. It's got five speakers that sort of give you Dolby Atmos and all of that sort of thing, but it doesn't give you stereo separation. So one of the ways in which you can use it is use it with your speakers that you can link to it via Bluetooth. I would say, look, I'm assuming you've ordered it from Amazon, and therefore you'll have a 30-day money-back period. Try it and see if you like it. And I mean, spec-wise, it's lovely. You know, Dolby Atmos and so forth is unusual to find on the smart speaker. The way I tend to go with these things is, instead of trying to build the speaker quality into the smart bit of the smart speaker, I tend to have a smart speaker which can have an adequate speaker in it, but then I'll connect via Bluetooth to really high quality speakers, and in that way you can get the best sound. And it means that every time you want new features and a new smart speaker, you don't have to rebuy the really expensive bit, which is, you know, the audio speakers. So my way would be to do that, to go for a modular approach. This is obviously a neater approach because it's just one box, but that one box is also the reason why it's limited, because it's all the sound, five speakers, great, but it's all coming from one point in the room. So you need to, you know, I personally would try it. If you're not convinced, send it back. It'll get cheaper, by the way, as well. You know, we're heading up towards the end of the year when we got sort of Black Friday deals coming up and Christmas deals and stuff like that. So it's nice to play with things at the beginning. But my personal view is, you might want to just take a view when you see it. And if you send it back, it's not the end of the world. You could just try different different things, but you could get a much cheaper speaker, because as you say, that one's about £200. You get a much cheaper one and then connect it. And it may also be, by the way, you may already own really good speakers and amplifiers. I mean, one thing I saw someone do recently is take an old hi-fi stack. You remember the old separates that people had? And they bought this little gizmo for about £20, which Bluetooth enabled this 40-year-old hi-fi amplifier. So suddenly it could not only take, you know, music from cables, but it could take music over Bluetooth.
Oh.
So then you can connect your smart speaker or your phone or your tablet to it via Bluetooth. You don't have to have a wire, and then have the quality of, you know, these, you know, juicy tannoy speakers or whatever it is that you have, you know. So a lot of times people really have already fantastic speakers. Any speaker that's sort of designed into a small space, you know, it's going to struggle on the bass a little bit as well. So my personal feeling is to try and repurpose your old hi-fi if you have it, or consider buying separate speakers and connecting them via Bluetooth or the old-fashioned way, using a cable.
I'll get my old ghetto blaster out. Funky Jay says, occasionally on my Lenovo, if I said that right, tablet,
yep,
I get this phrase: unfortunately, Google Play Store has stopped. Also, if I touch on Google Play Store itself, nothing happens. It sort of disappears. Any suggestions, asked Funky Jay.
Okay. So when it says it stopped, what it means is that the app that is the Google Play Store that gives you access to the apps that you can download for, you know, any Android device has basically fallen over. When it stopped, it means crashed. It's just a nice way of saying crashed. So that could be... most likely to be a software problem. There are certain hardware problems with the Lenovo tablet that could explain it, but more likely to be software. So what I would suggest that you do is make sure that you're running the latest version of the Android operating system that that particular tablet can take. So I'd do an update, and that's a good idea in most cases anyway, because it means that you get security updates. So if there are vulnerabilities in your version of Android, they can be patched as well. Other than that, I mean, I'm just sort of ashamed to say it, but it's good advice. If you switch it off and switch it back on again, that often clears the problem, but it doesn't. So it's interesting. There will be an underlying reason for that, which could be a bug in the software, but sometimes that bug only occurs when a sequence of events have happened, you know,
right,
almost random. So by restarting the machine, you restart that sequence, and it can be stable for, you know, another day or another week before it happens again. It depends on what that sequence of events is. But ultimately, you know, if a update doesn't fix it, then do some research online, search for the error message in quotation marks. Oh, by the way, if you search, when you search for an error message or something like that in quotes, then put the word resolved next to it as well. So, because there's lots of people that ask questions online, and often they've asked exactly the same question as you, they've got exactly the same problem, and when you look up the page with it on, you find that no one's actually given them an answer. So if you put the word resolved when you search for an answer to a question, you often get ones that have been resolved and have been ticked as being resolved. So I just think that you need to check for that. Is this a known problem? If it's a known problem with the software, have they patched the software already? If it's people having hardware problems, then you can consider a fix. But the problem, when we talked about repairability a moment ago, the problem with repairing tablets is that they're often nigh on impossible to repair and not cost effective to do so. I mean, if you ever look inside an iPad, for example, it's a lot of glue in there, and you have to use a hairdryer and a guitar pick to sort of just kind of get the case open, much less do any sort of repair on it. So these devices are not often very repairable, but let's hope it's software. Look for an update, and then search for solutions if other people have been having the same problem. If you have a problem like that, it's you're usually not the only one that's having it, so you'll find they'll be quiet. But the trick, search for the answer in a particular way. So don't just type in the error message, type it in quotation marks, because that is the search engine to look for that exact sequence of words, not just those words that might happen to appear on a web page in any random order. So if you learn how to search, that's the best way of solving problems.
Top tip. We've also had this as well from somebody about this iPhone update. And I know you were going to cover this anyway. I'm slightly concerned. I didn't know there was an iPhone update. I should have done. Is this with all iPhones, or
no? It's the main one that they've been talking about is iPhone 5.
Okay.
Obviously, I think that goes back to 2012. But this can actually apply to 4S and even some of the iPads as well, if they've got a cellular chip in it. So, you know, with the iPads, you get Wi-Fi only, and then you get Wi-Fi and 4G or Wi-Fi and 3G, whatever they were at that time. The ones with the SIM card in them can also suffer this problem. So the issue is this. Do you remember you're too young to remember, but I'll educate you on this. There was a thing called the Y2K bug, or the millennium bug, that when we hit the year 2000, the world was meant to crash and burn because all the dates were stored in two digits. So when we said, you know, 19, did we mean 2019 or 1919? You know, because it only assumed the last two digits. It was rather difficult. So this problem is similar. So smart devices often get their position, but also their date and time from GPS. And by that, I mean from satellites in geostationary orbit over us that transmit, and our phones pick them up. That's what a GPS receiver does. That's what your sat-nav does. It picks up a radio signal from near space, from orbit. And part of that is not only the location data, but it's also the date. And the part of the date which represents the weeks is done by a week number. So W-E-E-K. So what I'm trying to say is they store the week number in 10 bits. That means the number can only be from 0 to 1023. That means every 19.7 years, the week number resets itself to 0. It goes up 1024 weeks, which is just short of 20 years, and then it goes back to 0. So suddenly your phone now thinks it's 19.7 years ago, which will confuse the hell out of it and all the software that it is, and stops you doing various things, including updating the operating system over the air, which is the way you'd normally do it, wirelessly. So the deadline was midnight last night, that if you had one of these affected devices, that you had to update it with a version of the iOS operating system that would mean that your phone would continue to work. If you haven't done it, you will know, because your phone will now not be working properly, if at all. But there is a workaround. If all is not lost, you do not have... I wasn't telling you all this just for the fun of gloating about the fact that you've lost your phone. There is a way around this, and it is this. It's not very simple, but if you have a computer, or you can access a computer that's running iTunes, you plug your phone into the computer using into a USB socket on the computer. You then do a complete backup of everything that's on there, and it will offer to do that for you automatically, and it should still allow you to do that, even though the phone is thus affected. Once you've done a complete backup, then you need to wipe the phone and set it up as if it was a brand new phone. When you set it up as a brand new phone, it will look for the latest update that was available and apply it for you. You will now have a phone with no data on it, but the operating system that, you know, you could have done more simply up until midnight last night. Then you reinstate your backup, and you should now have a phone with the latest operating system software, which knows what day it is, quite literally, and all your data back as well. But it is a real pain to do that. It takes some time. You know, if you need some hints and tips along the way, just you can get me via Twitter at Gadget Detective, and I'll sort of point you in the right direction. But it is doable. It's just that instead of taking, you know, 5 minutes, it might take you an hour to do this now. And it's a bit tricky. But in essence, the steps are connect it to a laptop or desktop PC running iTunes, back up the device, wipe the device, set it up as new. Having set it up as new, then reinstate the backup.
On the subject of phones, Barbara's given us a call from Eastbourne. You've got an issue with your Nokia phone, is that right?
That's right, yes.
What's happening?
Well, I don't use it very much. I just really keep it. If I need to make a phone call when I'm away from my home. So quite often, before I set out, I'll check how much charge there is in it. If I switch it on and then sort of don't make a call immediately or do anything on it, if I don't use it when I've been out, then I just want to turn it off again. And if I do that, And because I haven't done anything on the phone, it wants to reboot. And sometimes I have to keep rebooting it, well, at least three times sometimes. The trouble is, when it reboots, it starts from sort of scratch. And it's a very, very slow start. I mean, you switch it on and it sits there saying it's an Android one for a while, and then Nokia comes up and then it plays a little tune and still Nokia sits there before it, you can open it, you sort of swipe up the screen and it gives you then all the things you want to do. But it's very annoying taking all that time just to turn it off again.
Yeah. Have you tried doing a sort of a more substantial restart of the phone? Because this is a problem that, I mean, it's been reported with other, I'm not sure what model you've had, but various Nokia models and in fact, other
phones. It's a Nokia Android One.
Okay. So what you can try and do is restart it, but hold the power button down all the way until it's completely restarted. Yeah. Now, this procedure can vary a little bit from phone to phone, but in essence, what we're trying to do is a more significant restart that's going to clear some of the memory because it's got itself a little bit confused, your phone. I don't think there's a hardware problem with it per se, but some of the memory is not clearing, and therefore when it comes up again, it's spotting an error and trying to clear the error by restarting. So you have to do a more substantial restart. Now, on a lot of phones, that's just a matter of pressing and holding the power button until it's completely restarted, not just enough to trigger the process. Some other phones use a combination of keys, a power key and another key, like a volume key plus a power key, something like that. But what you need to do is do a sort of, sometimes it's mode reboot, but you need to do a full reset of the phone. And that hopefully that will clear it. The other way in which you could try doing it, if that model has a removable battery, you could try removing the battery for a period of time and see if that helps clear anything. But often these problems will survive battery removal and just need to be reset. Do you have a lot of information inside the phone that you would not want to lose?
My telephone numbers, yes.
All your telephone numbers and so forth. Okay. And have you ever backed up that information in any way?
No.
Okay, well, it's always worth doing that, not least because if you lose your phone, you'll lose access to all those numbers as well. With a lot of phones, you can back up simply by connecting the device to a computer and allowing it to do a backup, and the software to do that is often, in this case, on the Nokia support website. So you should do that anyway. I know that's not a very convenient thing to do, and a lot of us don't do it, but, you know, this process of restarting the phone, the fact that it's resetting, the fact that it's a mobile device that could be lost, all of these things could lead to a loss of that data. And if you don't have it anywhere else, you know, some of us don't have separate lists of our contacts other than in our phones. And, you know, that would be potentially disastrous if one were to lose the information or the phone that holds it. But so what I would suggest to you is try and do a reset. We might need to do a bit of research. If a hard reset isn't possible, but just by holding it, then I'd be happy to sort of research that phone specifically for you and get back to you with some detailed instructions.
I'll get on with it then.
Try and do it. But if not, if you're happy to let me have a number or an email or something, I'd be happy to work with you to get that done.
Aww.
But in the meantime, I'd advise you and everyone else, please back up your phone, because phones are not just phones anymore. They're sort of mobile computers, and they hold all this information. They're more vulnerable in many ways because, you know, we can drop them, we can leave them on, you know, on a bus or whatever. We can lose them or have them stolen. And if we haven't got backups, then, you know...
You've lost everything.
Because, I mean, I spoke to someone not long ago that they'd lost their partner, and the photos were on the phone
and they were not anywhere else.
And there was nothing I could do because they were physically gone. It wasn't like the phone was broken and we could try and recover it. They were gone. And the person who stole the phone probably doesn't care.
No. It's so upsetting, though.
And I'm only sharing that with you because, we should do it now. And I'm not trying to be, you know, cleverer than thou, because believe me, I've been caught out by loss of data myself, not having had proper backup. So I speak from painful experience myself.
Oh yeah, I've done it. I lost all my contacts, and it means now when I get texts from people, I don't know who they're from, and then it's really awkward because then I have to message them back going, who are you? This is, thank you for your lovely message. I have no idea who you are, but thank you anyway.
I've got someone who sends me Christmas greetings every year and I have no idea who they are. It's the same number every year.
It's me, by the way. It's me. I'm going to claim that one.
No, I've got your number blocked. It's fine. So was it Barbara, I think, wasn't it? Please back up your phone as well, even if it's a simple phone.
But or, try you that know, reset if you can't, as well.
If you can't work, I mean, I hate to be old school about this, but if you're having trouble backing it up and it's like 50 numbers, just write them down.
Yeah.
Just put it on a bit. I know it's like not very high tech, but just somehow do it. I mean, I've been reduced when I haven't been able to do a backup on a particularly ancient phone. I've just cycled through each one and snapped the screen on another phone.
I
mean, it's not ideal, but you know, if it's a couple of hundreds, you might not want to write them all down. So it's not a great way of doing it. I'm not recommending that as a form of backup. But if you're really stuck, just look in your phone today and just say, if I were to lose this phone now, what would happen? What would I lose? What could I recover? And what would that mean?
It would be gone
to me?
Forever. Sarah has got in touch to say, unfortunately, I will have to join Facebook in order to access information on a club's Facebook website for dates and times of meetings. I've resisted joining Facebook up until now.
Good for you, Sarah.
As there is just too much personal information online. I've read up on how to select the settings for maximum privacy, but even on those settings, how much personal information can be seen by members of the club? I would guess that I would have to like or join their Facebook site in order to access it. I have no intention of posting anything or using Facebook for any form of social.
Yeah, so this is how does one dance with the devil safely question. Sarah, what you can do is limited, and the fact that you are alert to the dangers of sharing too much information with Facebook is a good, very good starting point. What I would say to you is, whatever solution you come to, Facebook will move those settings around and change the defaults on you. So even if you set up a perfectly safe system, there was a very famous case of Mark Zuckerberg's private family photos becoming public because the security defaults, the privacy defaults changed, and it even caught Mark Zuckerberg out. And his pictures were available online for, I think, some hours before they realised and blocked them again. There are privacy settings that you can do, but just be aware. I mean, one thing is, don't friend people on Facebook. I know they get really offended because I get these friend requests, which I then have to ring people up and say, I'm not going to do this and this is why. But you see, because if you friend people, if you think of what happened with the Cambridge Analytica scandal, where a load of information was scraped off Facebook by this app. The way it worked, it wasn't only people that filled in that particular sort of, in quotes, fun questionnaire, but it was all their friends. So if Alison, you are a Facebook user and you fill out a form like that, for fun or whatever, then all your friends' data can be gathered from that as well. It sort of jumps out one. That's why I think actually having a Facebook account and a WhatsApp account is actually quite an antisocial thing, because even people who wisely avoid them can actually get their data scraped as well. So there's not much you can do. You just need to go through every privacy setting and lock down everything that you can. And they are in several different places on Facebook. They don't make it easy for you, and they move it around. If you can do things like switch off, if you're using a mobile device, try and switch off the GPS. If you want to be really smart about it, there is one thing you can do. And this is against their terms of business, but it's not illegal. Facebook do not allow anonymous accounts, and they go to great lengths to stop you creating one. But it is possible. There are documents online where people have gone through, two pages of steps that you have to go through to set up an anonymous account, and it involves using something called a VPN, a virtual private network, so you appear to be somewhere else than where you physically are. It involves not allowing them to track your location. It involves dummy email addresses. So it's not an easy thing to do, But it is possible to set up what is to all intents and purposes an anonymous account, which will still give you access to Facebook. And if you're not going to use it for social media, you know, friending people and posting and so forth, then that might be a good approach. As I say, it's against their terms of service, which means that if they catch you doing it, they'll kick you off. Or what they sometimes do is they identify people who do it. So they'll gather enough data to work out who they are. And that tells you how smart their algorithms are, because even when you go through all those anonymizing steps, there are still ways that they can sort of decloak you and unmask you. And sometimes what they do is, instead of freezing your account, they just put a name to it.
Really?
Which if you've been using that account to do something, you know, nefarious,
you might not want your name
even just journalistic, and you want to be, you know, you don't want, you know, you're a whistleblower or something like that. You know, so just be careful about that, because nothing is foolproof. Facebook are very clever and they have very, very smart algorithms. But you can try and do that, and that might be an interesting experiment to do.
Well, thank you for your question, Sarah. Got inundated with questions and queries this week. If people want to ask you something further, they can get in touch on Twitter, can't they?
Yeah. Come and say hello at Gadget Detective, and particularly if you've got any problem that we've discussed here and you just need a bit more advice, that's probably a good way to catch my attention.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, Fevzi. Speak to you soon.
Cheers.